windy today.
Oh, it's Thursday.
So am I. Let's go have a drink. Welcome to Brookings Cafe. There's just no telling who might be here today as we venture in to quench our thirst. We call it our Great American Debate. We come to the discussion in the spirit of fairness and an attempt to offer something conclusive. We don't claim to be experts, but we will strive to come to the table prepared to discuss our topic. We are going to extend invitations to those we think may offer an opposing point of view, and in some cases we may extend a challenge to specific people or groups to defend their point of view. Beware we fact-check anything that sounds questionable, and we look dimly on mere opinions that aren't based in knowledge. We are trying to reach some sort of a resolution, something that both sides can settle on as an idea worth promoting. Today, wild and crazy stories about Brookings, people who discovered Brookings and then moved here, and the stories that they have about finding Brookings and the journey here. This could have been a Halloween show. The stories are scary. I'm Dan.
I'm Teresa.
I'm Ray.
I'm Dean.
I'm Debbie.
And how did you find out about Brookings? Well, I guess I'll tell my story first. I was working in Oklahoma and approaching retirement age within a couple of months, I think. And I was working with a friend who was from Eugene, Oregon. And we were sitting around one day talking about, well, the various aspects that you have to discuss when you're near retirement, like where are you going to get the money and that sort of thing. And I said, where do you think would be a good place to retire? And he said, well, I'll tell you a little secret. He mentioned the name Brookings, and so I went home and I pulled up my Google and I typed in Brookings, Oregon, and I started looking at the pictures and I said, wow. So I decided to come out and visit, and I did, and I fell in love with it and made plans to move here.
I was out working in the yard one day, and I came in the house and my wife said, we're moving to Brookings. And she had Zillow up on the computer and had all these houses lined up and everything. And wasn't too long, I was packing a trailer and off we went, towed the trailer down here with my motorhome, and I ain't moving again.
And where were you at the time, Ray?
A little town called Healy in Alaska. It's about 100 miles south of Fairbanks. It gets brutally cold there in the wintertime, but we hadn't spent winters there in a long time because we were snowbirding, and I was quite tired of snowbirding.
Didn't you say you were out in the yard when you heard the news?
You wouldn't call it a yard here. It was, like firewood to gather and broken down trees to pick up. And I lived on a homestead, so you did all kinds of things I don't do anymore.
Well, I myself am a Delker product. My family, the Tippmans, have been around the Smith River, California, and Klamath, California area. So real close. Did a lot of shopping up in Fred Meyer, trying to escape the California sales tax. Sorry, state of California. Left for a little bit in my late teens and then came back in my early 20s to begin working at the school district as a computer technician. So I knew of Brookings as soon as I knew of anywhere, and I like Brookings quite a bit.
I have friends who live here in Brookings, and they've lived here for years. I went to elementary and high school with them. When I retired years ago in Montana, I was already and had been sick and tired of the cold, ice, snowy weather. I had all of the ski equipment, cross-country, skate skis, downhill, snowshoes, but I was over it. And I went to Sacramento last December for several weeks with another girlfriend and stayed there contemplating Sacramento and having to use my map app to get around from here to there all the time. And I thought, oh man, there's just too many people here. So I went back to Montana, and this is Northwest Montana by Glacier National Park. And meanwhile, my girlfriend here is on Facebook putting up pictures and saying, this is my view on my drive to work every morning of the ocean and the lovely weather. And she'd been trying to get me to come visit for a long time. And I said, okay, this is it. I'm doing it. Beginning of March, I got here on a Thursday night. Sunday, it snowed. And she says, I promise this doesn't usually happen. I you know, watched it for the little bit that it was here and thought, I can do this. And immediately decided I was going to move to Brookings. Went and found myself a 33-foot-long bighorn with three slide outs at Little Bay. Thanks, Tim. And it was wonderful. It was like a little mini apartment. And I set it up on, it was hard to find a place just at that time because their busy season was about to start. But Riverbend Terrace put me up another 33-footer. It just moved out. The timing was just perfect. I didn't set the thing up, but I decided, well, this is it. It can sit and wait while I go home and sell my house and get ready and move back. So March 19th, I left and went back to Montana and sold my 4-bedroom, 2-bath home with a big yard and told my kids they could have what they wanted. They took all the good stuff. I kept just enough to move down and be in a little RV. And I acquired a person who knew how to drive. I had not driven much outside of small towns, let alone pulling a 6x12 U-Haul. So he'd been my electrician, was a nice, quiet guy, and AA, so he was probably pretty safe. And we left Friday morning early and made it through. We tried to go to Lewistown, Idaho at one point in time, and I said, no, my friends have told me how to get from where I'm at to Brookings, and that's not the direction, so no, we're not going that way. And then pretty soon he was trying to go right into Portland, and I said, no, we don't have to do that. There's other ways, and listen to the map app. She's telling us that we don't go that way. We eventually did make it to Brookings, and the next morning, let's see, so that was, we spent the night in Hood River. Oh, and that was another part of my story. He takes off and drives with this 6x12 U-Haul behind up these steep hills trying to find and recreate some motorcycle trip he'd gone on back in the day when his AA buddies were on a motorcycle trip. And I said, but we can't go up this hill. He said, oh, your Tahoe can handle it. And I said, well, I'm worried about the stuff in my U-Haul. So anyway, long story short, he wanted to go the 10 miles up to find a bed and breakfast. And I said, well, not staying at a bed and breakfast that has one bed with you in it, buddy. So headed back to find a place along the interstate. And along the way, he'd been saying some kind of strange things about the universe and different kind. I'm going, okay, we're on different wavelengths here. So, and that's part of the story is kind of crucial to the next part. So we made it to Brookings, and the next day I'd promised him, you know, that it could be kind of a vacation for him and I would fly him back. And after we got, you know, my stuff unloaded. So unloaded everything into the fifth wheel. Then the next morning I took him to Gold Beach so he could see the sea lions and experience the ocean. And he didn't seem all that taken with it. And then I took him out to breakfast at Beachcombers, and I was visiting, and I thought, you know, he's just said some kind of weird things. I wonder how long he really wants to stay. And so I asked him, I said, so when should I make that airplane flight for you? You know, the sooner I do it, the less expensive it'll be for me. And he said, well, you know, I am paying to have my dog watch. So if you don't want to make it for Monday, that's fine. And so I did. I called, and this was Sunday. I called and made the arrangements, and then we were heading back to the RV park after we'd gone to Fred Meyer's, and I bought the septic hose and the water hose, and we're following a little taxi cab. And I thought, oh my goodness, because I'm thinking, I have to have this guy at the airport leave at 6 and have him there at 6:45 so he can be there an hour before the plane leaves. And the taxi cab pulled right into my spot almost next to me, and I said, hey, do you live here? And he said, yes. And I said, well, how about this? Can you take this guy to the airport at 6 in the morning? And he said, sure. So we made those plans. It was fine. So then this guy started putting my hose together, and he did the water hose, and I told him that I thought the hose should be hooked up right here in this spot. And he said, oh, no. It should. That says Sea City right here. Well, if the flap had been closed, then I could have shown him it said sewer on it. He didn't believe me. I finally agreed that he was right because it had been 2 months. And I thought, well, maybe I forgot, didn't remember correctly. And he hooked it up and turned it on and then started to try to put the septic hose together and was trying to find the spot in the ground to put it and was asking me about it. Where was it? And I'm thinking I should go in and check those water spigots to make sure no one has left them on because people were in and out during those months. I had friends who would come and they put in a dehumidifier and they'd empty it every day because it was pretty wet. One of the slide outs had leaked, and the Tim from Little Bighorn or Little, what's it called? I forget the name of his business. I'll think of it in a minute. But anyway, where I bought the Bighorn, he had a guy, Harold, come and fix the thing. And so they were trying to get it all dried out for me, and everybody was working so hard. And then we were standing outside, and he was hooking up the septic, and all of a sudden water came gushing out of the side of the Bighorn on. I said, "What is happening?" And he said, "Quick, turn off the water." And I said, "Well, which water?" And what? Anyway, it went belly up from there. It was a good thing he was leaving the next day, because all the people in the park said, "Nope, it's a wash," because it was vented so that you could have a washer dryer in the closet. I didn't want them. I wanted the space, so that vent was just up through the ceiling, and when he turned on the wrong water, it was sewer water that filled up the tank and then continued to fill up and went out the vents into the ceiling and down into the walls. So now it's toxic waste material. Tried to explain to him he didn't need to keep wallowing around in the sewer water, because these people that knew how to do RV living said it's a waste. And he went on about the universe and all of this other crazy stuff. He told me later, he said, "Debbie, you know, as all as happens in the universe, you did want this to happen." And I said, "How can you even think that? Aren't you not hearing what I'm telling you? No, none of this is okay." But, you know, long story short, I ended up finding a different place, and it is much better than the 33-foot Bighorn would have been after all. So, long story short, turned out to be a good thing, and I love Brookings. Yeah, thank you.
See, did I not tell you this was going to be a scary show? So you might want to get the younger children out of the room.
Okay, I thought I had a good moving story. I think, Debbie, yours might beat mine. But first, I have to start with how I found Brookings. Well, I didn't find Brookings. I found Dan, and he had already found Brookings. I was a city girl living in a high-rise for over 20 years in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I love the city. When I went on vacation, I went to cities. I went to LA. I went to Chicago. I just was a city girl. And I started dating Dan, and that was fun. And he started telling me about Brookings. And I said, "Well, okay." And so I kind of derailed his plans for a while. And we had to date. We were having a great time. We were clicking on a lot of levels. But I sure wasn't ready to move off to Brookings. He really wanted to. So we continued to date, and as it got pretty serious, and we were like, "Yeah, well, this might work out. Believe it or not, we might actually have a thing here." And I said, "Well, I guess we should go visit Brookings." And I wasn't convinced. I love the ocean. I saw the pretty pictures, but the city girl in me didn't see anything interesting in the downtown pictures online. And there isn't a lot of architecture here. There's more when you get here and you look around, but online, I just wasn't convinced. But I wanted to come here. I was falling in love with Dan, and he was wonderful. So we flew into Portland, drove down the coast, and it was just breathtaking. I'd been to Colorado a lot, but I had never been to Oregon. By the time we arrived in Brookings, I was just in love with this whole area, the nature, the beauty. Still, though, I'm a city girl, and I'm thinking, well, there's got to be enough in this town to really keep me excited and happy. So we got here. It was magical. We went to a theater production in the theater in Harbor. It was really good. I love theater. We went to a concert in Azalea Park, and that was just fantastic. Sat there on the grass, had a picnic, listened to the concert, found another concert at the golf course. Oh, we spent 7 days here, and the first thing I did was I went and got all the newspapers and the Insider, anything I could think of to find out what was going on. I didn't want to miss anything local, and I wanted to do the local stuff. I didn't want to go off to Trees of Mystery. We did go up to Jerry's jet boats, and we did that. But I really wanted to just experience the city and the people. And then one night we went and had dinner at Oxenfree, and I was like, "This is a pretty cool restaurant. I kind of like this." We spent days on the beach and took picnics and went into stores, and everybody was so friendly. And everybody always says, "Oh, are you visiting?" or "How did you find Brookings?" which people still, that's a real typical thing. "How did you find Brookings?" Because it's kind of out of the way. I mean, Dan was ready to move here, and I was either going to move here or lose him, or he was going to lose me. I don't know what would have happened. We went back. It was in September, and decided that we were going to give ourselves till May to get here. I never really had any second thoughts. And since I moved here, and I can share more of this later, it's just been even better than I expected. More friends, more interesting things to do. People that say they're bored here, I don't understand. They need to call me. I am not bored at all. It's just been an amazing adventure, and there's still a lot to come. So that's how I got here.
I've heard it said, apparently those who are in the know this, that Brookings is essentially a college campus for seniors. Let's see, Dane, you're the young squirt. The rest of us are retired. And Ray, I want to know more about, you say Gina just said we're moving to Brookings. Why?
We were talking about leaving Alaska permanently and not snowbirding anymore. Seriously, that is what happened. But she has a friend that lives in Oregon. Oregon seemed like a good place weather-wise, the Oregon coast. And this woman told her that Brookings is the best place in the world and we should come and look at it. And Gina's very good at doing internet research. So she had researched everything. We knew the crime status. We knew how many of what race there was and how many people drove Chevys and whatever. And literally did have about 8 or 9 houses picked out on Zillow. And we actually wound up buying one of those houses, which we're very happy with.
Did you know Curry's political makeup before you came down?
She told me when we got here. Yeah, she kept that part secret.
Oh, and why do you think that is?
It would have dissuaded me somewhat.
I think really?
I still would have come, but
are you willing to tell our listeners why that would have dissuaded you?
Are we the only county in Oregon that actually voted for 45? What's his name?
Bush 45?
No. This 45 president.
Oh, this current 45. Well,
yeah.
I happen to have the Curry County election results printed out here in front of me.
Oh, good.
For your edification.
Good.
As it stands, the votes in Curry County for Donald J. Trump and Mike Pence were 7,212. The votes for Hillary Clinton and Tim Kaine were 4,300 exactly. The votes for the Green Party, 273. For the Libertarians, 498. Write-ins, 328. This is according to the official general election results for Curry County, November 8th, 2016.
I must say that Alaska is incredibly right-wing. I mean, we used to consider it a waste of time to vote because we were going to lose regardless. And not only that, the national election had already been decided before we voted because of the time changes. And we had a winter house in Arizona, so it wasn't too much of a shock actually coming here.
Is this where I should chime in and say I'm so glad that I do not have to shovel snow in the cold and ice any longer?
Okay, the house we had in Alaska, we had a homestead and we had a 3/4 mile road to our house, and it was not level very much of it. We had to plow that all winter long when we lived there in the wintertime, and it can rain all at once. And even when it snows, by the time I have coffee, it's gone, so that's good.
Oh.
Well, and Ray, you live up high, so you do get a little bit more of the extreme.
We've had frost already twice this year.
Wow. The weather is pretty funny because last winter it rained a lot, but I didn't think that was a lot. I was told it was going to rain all winter. So I just wonder, what are these locals complaining about? It's supposed to rain in the wintertime, and it rains the whole time. I didn't realize there were degrees of rain. So I actually didn't mind the winter, and I feel like since I moved here and experienced one of the wetter winters, I'm good to go now. Whatever happens, and those few little snows, when they happen, it's kind of fun, and it won't keep you off the roads, so...
I had in-laws come to visit in January, I think, last year, with the idea of moving here. Unfortunately, it rained every day of the 3 weeks they were here, so they decided not to move here.
Are you glad your in-laws didn't move here?
I said I was fortunate.
Oh, okay. I didn't catch that. Well,
in case they listen to the post on this, I'm only kidding. I wish they had moved here, actually.
I've heard so many people say that they just literally drove down the coast in Oregon, got a feeling, or maybe found the right house. Most of the time, though, they were drawn to Brookings. It wasn't just the house. And there was something that just grabbed them about living here. I imagine that every small town on the coast has its own personality. I grew up in a small town. I was born in a town of 10,000, which if you take the population of Brookings and Harbor and put it together, very similar. And this is nothing like the small town I grew up in Kansas.
There were 500 people in the town I lived in, and I had to drive 100 miles to buy a nail.
I grew up in a small town also. In fact, they still do not have a street light.
So you guys think you moved to the city?
Yeah.
Okay. We were 100 miles to the first stoplight.
One deal breaker for me, and Ray, I think you probably have the same feeling. If we had Walmart here and not Fred Meyer's, I don't think I would have moved to Brookings. I am not a Walmart fan. And Fred Meyer's, I feel like I've gone into a Super Target or better. It's actually better than a Target. I feel like I've gone into a department store in the city when I go upstairs. It's small, but it still has a lot to offer. And I was very glad that there was Fred Meyer's and not Walmart, because I don't think I would be living here.
And finally, there is Amazon and all of those other shopping sites out there that are online. The town that I was in for a number of years before Tulsa was a place called, well, it was actually on Keystone Lake, which is just west of Tulsa. But the town associated with that particular area was Cleveland, Oklahoma. And it was a small town, probably about the size of Brookings without harbor. I discovered in a lot of cases that you were talking about driving 100 miles to get a nail. If I needed a part, I probably had to go to Home Depot in Tulsa to get it. And then if I got it home and it was the wrong damn part, I had to drive all the way back again. So, you know, at least on a nail, it's not quite so critical. But if it's the wrong faucet repair kit, you just have to make the trip again. So I have some issues with the availability of things. I'm a hobby enthusiast. I like model airplanes. There is no model airplane shop or any kind of a hobby shop here in Brookings. And for some of the simple little things that I need, like the special glues that model airplane guys use, they don't have them here, not even in the hardware store or the lumber store. So I wind up driving to Grants Pass to get little goodies like that. So I gave up some things when I left Tulsa, and I appreciate having the Fred Meyer's here is really, really nice, because there are so many things that are available here that weren't available in Cleveland, Oklahoma. And then when I moved back to Tulsa, I took advantage of all the shops that were there, and I went back for my mom's 90th birthday this last summer, and I took advantage of the fact that I was in the big city to go buy things. So I hit the hobby shops, all of the shops that I was used to in Tulsa, to essentially stock up on things that I needed for my projects at home.
A lot of mail order places would not mail to Alaska for whatever reason. I don't know. You could even Prime, Amazon wouldn't, and some things. And it was no rhyme or reason as to what they would send. One time I needed a plate for my router table. And what that is a piece of aluminum, 1/4 inch thick and about 8 by 10 inches, weighs less than a pound. They wouldn't ship it. I have no idea why. I run into that all the time.
Whenever I'm not sure why something does or does not happen, I follow the money. And I wonder if there just wasn't enough profitability in shipping this item or that item up there.
There's some kind of a deal that the government has, or the Postal Service has, that shipping to Alaska is fairly inexpensive.
Dane, I have a question for you. Since you've lived here a long time, what do you miss not having in Brookings? We're talking about stores. I've been pleasantly surprised that with Amazon Prime and living here, I really have not felt like I was disconnected from things I needed.
I have a question that I think precedes that, which is, okay, so you're from this area. You said you left for a while when you were in your late teens. Where did you go? Did you go to the big city? Did you just go to another small town down the road?
No, I gave a few years to the Army.
To the Army, okay. So you grew up here. It's hard to imagine that you would miss things that the big city would provide. But do you? Do you gallivant off to Medford to get something that you need for your model airplane or whatever hobby you have?
Well, I would say that I don't think it's too hard to imagine something that you would miss at all. I've traveled a little bit, been to a few countries, been to a few places. I would say that this area does have a few things that are missing that a larger city may have, sure. Not just hobby places. Those that have existed in the past have been short-lived. Comic book stores usually don't last too long. Role-playing game stuff, not a whole lot here in this area. So for some of those hobbies, yeah, it's a little tough to find a connection in a smaller area. So you've kind of got to go online. You've got to make those connections online. Buying your glue sometimes, rather than being able to go into a brick-and-mortar store and find fellow hobbyists, you know, model painting, things like that. It's tough to find in this region.
Thank you for your service, by the way. What is getting to me are year-round yard sales, estate sales. Oh my goodness. That's going to be my downfall. I already know it. But I love it. I love it. I love it.
Debbie, I think there's a support group for that.
But I know.
I'm not sure. A lot of people who move here say that. I have only allowed myself to go to a yard or estate sale that's very, very close to my house, like my neighbors, if I know about it. I don't look in the paper. I don't seek them out. We have seen one or two that we've stopped at. And the reason I don't go to estate sales is how much stuff I had when I moved here. Do you want me to share my moving horror story?
Sure. This is another scary one. So if there are children in the room, you need to leave immediately.
I'm a stuff person. I admit it. I love stuff. I'm sentimental about everything.
Barbie dolls.
Barbie. Unapologetically, I love
postcards.
Postcards are
old newspapers.
Well, they're interesting. Okay, it's my story now. So I really tried to pare down. And we decided in September after visiting here, yes, we're going to move to Brookings. We're going to move in May, or that was the plan. We didn't have a place yet. And so I really started going through things. It was a major project, and I'm very sentimental, and I can only get rid of so much. So we get ready.
Halloween costumes.
Oh, yeah, they're great. So we're packing the truck. My son flies down from Chicago. He's big.
Two trucks.
You're getting ahead of...
Oh, wait. We started with just one.
Right, yeah. We only have one truck right now. My son flies down from Chicago. He's really big and strong, and he's going to be our workhorse. And all of his friends from Tulsa, they came, and I paid them, and they were thrilled to help. And it was like a little reunion for them. And all day Saturday, he's saying, Mom, I don't think it's going to fit. I don't think it's going to fit. It's a big truck. And then he would come back and he'd say, it's looking better. Because he was really good at packing things. I mean, he can pack that moving van like a Tetris game. He puts it all in there. Finally, at about 10 o'clock on Saturday night, he came back upstairs. I just quit going downstairs to look at the moving van. I couldn't handle it. I was stressed out. I was coordinating everybody upstairs to get the things downstairs. And he came up at 10 and he said, it's full. I looked around and I said, I can't leave all this. It's not an option. There was too much to figure out what to take out. We were supposed to leave the next day for Brookings on Sunday. At midnight, after a glass of wine or two, I'm sitting on my balcony reserving another truck to pick up the next day with a trailer that will pull the car. And the trailer was going to have to come from one place and the truck from another because they weren't both together. But you can rent a U-Haul at midnight on a Saturday. And that was nice to know. And so we got the second truck. We loaded it. And finally on Monday at about 2 p.m., we headed out. And we were on the road. We were so relieved.
Two huge overloaded trucks towing two cars, one behind each truck.
And three drivers. We'd planned to have one truck pulling one car and one car so that we only were driving one truck and we could kind of trade off, but that didn't happen. So we're finally on the road. Everything's going great. We get through Colorado, and I think it was in Colorado the first time that the big Penske truck, the larger of the two, had major issues going up the hill.
Came to a shuddering stop.
Yeah. We called the 800 number. They did some diagnostic stuff. My son was taking care of it. He's very mechanical, and he's good with that. The truck got better, and after it sat there for a while, it seemed to be okay. So we headed on, and we were like, okay, not sure what happened. Penske told us to go on. Then it happened again and again and again.
In the middle of Nevada, 100 or 200 miles from anywhere.
Yes, it was very scary. And what we finally decided to do was to take the car off the Penske truck. We thought it was maybe too loaded because it was just freezing up in very strange ways when we went up hills. And what we later found out is the brakes were seizing. We didn't know that until after the trip was all over. So now we have three vehicles and three drivers, and we're worried about the inclines. We just think it can't make it up the hills. So we reroute our trip down through Reno. So now we're adding another day. Our plan was to get into Brookings Tuesday, unpack, and then be here for the first Azalea Festival weekend. Let's see what happened next. All three of us are driving, so there's no break. We end up in Reno at some casino because the truck drivers told us that was the best place to stay. And we have to figure out how to park these big trucks. And then my son had plans to go on a vacation with his family, with his friends. So we had to leave him at Grants Pass. And we left my car in Grants Pass. He went on and did his vacation with his friends who had moved out to Oregon about a year ago. And I had to drive the U-Haul from Grants Pass to Brookings, pulling Dan's fairly new car on the back because he was driving the Penske without a car on the back. And the Penske was the one really acting up. So it was very, very stressful. But I was proud of myself. I had had to drive that truck quite a bit since we had had to unload the car. And we had three drivers and three vehicles. I did really well. I couldn't believe. I would have never thought that I could have driven a truck pulling a car from Grants Pass to here. It worked out. I was stressed. I was kind of in tears by the time we got here because I was just so tired. And we didn't know if the truck was going to break down all the time. We get to our new place, and this was the funny thing that just kind of broke me out of my funk. I trip over the threshold walking into our new house, and I just went splat on the floor. My bag, my purse went everywhere. My drink went flying, and I just laid there, and I wasn't hurt. I could move everything, no broken bones, and I just started laughing.
You didn't have to mention the drink. We suspected that.
Yeah, I always have a drink. It was non-alcoholic, but I had been driving. And then after we got here and I fell over the threshold, I thought, that's a bad sign. But everything since then has been really wonderful.
And the interesting thing is that she went from having driven from Grants Pass to here was that she was just, you know, in tears. And so she said, just come on, get the door open. We need access to the toilets, need to get a drink, blah, blah, blah. The keys in the lockbox on the door, and we opened the door. And as soon as she went splat, she just broke out into laughter. And it just shook her out of this feeling sorry for herself mood and put her back into, well, okay, this is the way it's going to start, but I hope it gets better from here. And it has.
Teresa, I have to say, though, I got rid of everything because I thought I was going to be moving into a 33-foot long fifth wheel with three slide outs. And so for me to go to yard sales, I'm just acquiring again, but I have, to fill up what I ended up finding was a single wide. So it has a lot more space, a yard, and I've been happy to be out and about, and I'm learning the roads. Map app helps me find all these places. And speaking of driving, once I had that situation with that fella, I decided I could have the courage to drive a U-Haul all by myself from here to Montana and back again. I did it one more time and got all the rest of my stuff down here. Did it all by myself. And so talk about being proud. Yep. You find courage in yourself in little places, I'll tell you.
Now, Ray, you drove a motorhome.
Yeah.
To here. So how was that?
We'd been living in a motorhome for 6 months a year for, about 17, 18 years. So it was not a big deal. But having a 16-foot overloaded, very badly overloaded trailer on the back wasn't much fun. Motorhomes, once you get used to them, it's not a big deal. I didn't even bother seeing what the mileage was pulling the trailer. It's bad enough without that.
You had the motorhome pull the trailer?
Yeah.
With all your stuff?
Yeah.
And what about the vehicles?
My nephew came from Seattle. We flew him up to Alaska, and he drove the pickup, and I drove the motorhome. Kind of a funny story about him. I don't think he'd ever seen a real gun in his whole life. He just didn't live in that kind of society. And we were sitting in the Fred Meyer parking lot in Fairbanks, and I had a few guns I was bringing down with me, and Gina was trying to convince me that I had misinterpreted the Canadian website about bringing handguns down. And I said, no, it says you fill out the form. And so she says, why don't you call us? So anyway, I called the customs and they said, you can bring rifles, long guns through. You have to buy a permit of $50 or something like that. But there's a process to transport handguns through, and that process would take about 6 weeks. And I was going to leave in about 6 hours. So I had these two handguns in the motorhome, and I knew there was a gun dealer not far away, and you can ship guns. Gun dealers can ship them and different things like that. And so I threw them both in a backpack and off we walked to the gun store. And he was just so impressed. He says, this is like Breaking Bad. We throw the guns in the backpack and go walk over there. Anyway, that was it. It turned out that it was way, way more trouble than it was worth for me to own guns here. So I just sold them to the dealer probably for a third what they were worth.
It's like watching your best model airplane crash.
I know a lot of horror stories of people trying to sneak guns into Canada, so I wasn't going to try to do that. And I mean, it was a 16-foot trailer. I could have put them in the drawer of a dresser that was way in the front of the trailer where nobody could ever get to it. But it'd be just my luck, that would be the day they had the gun-sniffing dog there or something like that. So I didn't bother trying.
Mm-hmm. Well, all I have to say is thank heavens for my friends that I came to see in March, because when I had the wastewater in my fifth wheel, they came and rescued me and got everything that had been taken out of the U-Haul, put into the fifth wheel, tuck it all up to their shop, and kept it there for me. I think it took me 3 weeks, I guess, to find my plan B. But once again, they put me up, and I thank them immensely.
Was your fifth wheel destroyed with the sewage?
Yeah, it was destroyed. Fortunately, I had insurance on it, and they deemed it toxic waste material. And wow. They held it up to
that Eugene. Was pretty good deeming, I think. I would have deemed that as well.
They took it up to some hazardous waste plant or space in Eugene.
They took it to Mexico,
Myrtle,
and sold
her
it.
Her name was Myrtle. I named her Myrtle. Myrtle had to go to the toxic waste dump.
Juarez.
Poor thing.
Okay, so what appealed to you the most? Now, Dane, you're from here, so maybe the question for you is, something here has appealed to you all of these years, and so I ask, why haven't you left and gone to the big city, or you've traveled around a little bit? How is this a magnet for you?
Well, I've seen plenty of places that I like, but I like Brookings quite a bit too, and there's a lot here for me, and not just the scenery and the ocean, but the community that we've got here is pretty special here in Brookings. And I'm sure a lot of small places, oh gosh, we're special too. I suspect, and again, I'm just using my third eye senses here, that a lot of people sometimes will find Brookings incidentally. They'll come for the region. They'll come for the Wild Rivers Coast. And Brookings maybe happens to be a part of that. And again, I have no hard data to back up that sense, but I feel like most people as they're backpacking, biking, driving through, find Brookings perhaps as part of the whole, as part of the tour package or the coastal travels coming down here. And I like it quite a bit. I mean, gosh, Harris Beach State Park, the Azalea Park, walking through town, even the little Bankus Fountain there at the old Ray's parking lot. I like our parks. I like the area a lot. I mean, and of course, I've got family here. I've got family in Smith River. I've got family in Harbor. I've got my job. I've got the different things I do here in town. And that's what keeps me here. I've got so many different little roots here. It's hard to imagine going elsewhere. And that kind of leads me to a question for Teresa, too. In our introductions, when you run around, you mentioned, and feel free to correct, that perhaps a person who grew up here may not appreciate the trees or forests as much. I'm curious to know how you, in your life experience, how you came to that conclusion.
A little bit of background real quick from me. Oklahoma, the northeastern part where Tulsa is, of course, any city has brought in trees and other vegetation, other kind of plants that are from other areas, England, France, whatever. There are no native elms, for example, in Oklahoma that I know of. A lot of Oklahoma is scrub oak. Those are trees that grow to be maybe 20 feet tall, and they just kind of look like they're on their deathbed it's amazing that they survive some of the brutal weather that Oklahoma can dish out of over 100 degrees and extremely dry. It's kind of a bit like going from the desert to northeastern Oklahoma, not so much, because there is a lot of taller trees and better vegetation in northeast. But when you go in the southwestern parts or the panhandle of Oklahoma, it turns into desert real fast. So it's kind of night and day. But the question was to Teresa,
And Dane, you were asking why I thought people would take it for granted, the trees. Well, when I got off the plane in Portland, just the trees around there, they're so tall. And there are tall trees. I mean, I've been in the Appalachian Mountains. I've been in Colorado. My son and his wife, when they were here, they also had this, wow, this is beautiful. It is like very few other places. And I think the combination on the coast, especially with the coast, with all the rocks, I couldn't care less about the ocean on the East Coast. It's just sand and ocean. I'm like, okay, but it doesn't do that much for me. The coastal topography or whatever is amazing. And the trees are so tall, so thick. When you first come here, it is breathtaking. I was just like, honey, look, this is, I was literally speechless at times as we drove down the coast, and I would get almost teary-eyed. I'd be like, this is so beautiful. It is a magical place. I still had to have a city that had enough there for me, which it does. And that's one thing that I have been even more excited about Brookings since we got here. We have really a nice collection of restaurants. For this size of town, it's an amazing collection. Superfly, Irish Pub, I'm just naming some of my favorites. The Kunitai, Oxenfree, the Sushi Place, the Downtown Cafe.
Which sushi place now?
I didn't know we had more than one.
All of them.
Mm.
No, the one on Chetco. What else do we have?
Pacific Sushi then.
Okay. What's the other sushi place?
Well, I don't know if Cafe Kitanishi is still open.
Oh, they are.
Are they still open?
The one on Hemlock?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then there's also that one where Torero's used to be, which again, saying where Torero's used to be means a lot. It's in Brookings. It's off the path a little bit in that kind of adobe style structure. There's a bar right next to it. It's like the sushi grill or the Japanese grill. You can
see it from the highway. Is that the sushi noodle place?
Yes, mm-hmm. That's it.
Yeah, okay, yeah. They do sushi.
They're good,
obviously,
too.
Obviously, mm-hmm. They're called sushi noodle.
Well, Cafe Kitanishi is one.
Sushi noodle?
That's it. There's another one there. Yeah, so there's a trio.
I actually have not even tried all the restaurants in town. I haven't been to sushi noodle. And there's several others that I haven't been to. I've been to most of them. Oh, the pizza place, Zola's, down on the harbor. I'm not a big fan of just pizza to have pizza, but I like pizza that's a little interesting.
Mm.
And they do an amazing job. And I love fish. Dan's not a big fish person. I can always find something. I had fish tacos today at Asana's for lunch. That's wonderful. And like I said, I grew up in a town of 10,000. My aunt still lives there, and she will tell me, oh, we got this new restaurant and we're so excited. It's basically any restaurant that's not a Greasy Spoon diner, they get excited about. And I will go there sometimes when I've been visiting her and go to this new restaurant. It wouldn't make it 2 months in Brookings because it's not that special. I think that's, you know, part of it's the tourists that come through, and maybe retirees go out to eat a lot so it can support the restaurants. There is a sophistication here that I did not find in small towns, most small towns in Oklahoma. And the arts, I didn't even mention Friends of Music concerts. Mm. That is we were like, wow, this is really great.
Well, when you start totaling up all of the entertainment options that are here, the local theater here is excellent, really. It's comparable. Now I will say that Tulsa, Oklahoma has the advantage in that they can bring in big major shows like Cats, for example, The Lion King, big shows like that. If you're talking about theater in Tulsa, the theater that's being produced here is on par with that. And there are so many other entertainment opportunities. The concerts in the park are wonderful. And then there's always something going on either at the galleries or other events. Pistol River Concert was a real beautiful find. A small venue, and that's one of the things that I really like about it. If you go to a concert of that type in Tulsa, you get to sit on the back row. And if you go to one in Pistol River and you're on the back row, you're still almost sitting on the stage. And that's the kind of experience that I really like.
I'm glad they couldn't bring the Lion King here. I saw that, thought it was very boring.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Cats was good, though. I'd like to see Cats.
My friends had an extra vehicle, so I got to drive around while they were working. And that is what impressed me the most, was I love the ocean on the one side, and then it was just like I'm from northwestern Montana. It was just like northwestern Montana, almost close enough on the other side to keep me feeling like I hadn't really lost anything. I just added to it by being here.
Seriously, one of the reasons I left Alaska is it was 6 weeks of unbearable mosquitoes in the summertime.
Yeah. Really?
Oh, I've heard some of them are so large that they can carry away small children.
They fly in tactical formations, and we used to drive this road I talked of. It's 3/4 mile road, and mosquitoes are attracted to carbon dioxide and heat. So as we're driving up this road, which was a dirt road at 5 miles an hour, so by the time we got to the house, the car was covered with them, or the pickup. So what we would do is we would back the car up to the door, and we had what we called an Arctic entryway, which is just a little room you go into before you go into the house. And we would get out, run into the house, get into the Arctic entryway, slam the door, and this was maybe 25 feet we ran. We'd bring in about 100 with us, and we'd kill a whole bunch of them, kill as many as we could. Then we would go in and do something and wait a while till the mosquitoes dispersed from the car, and then we would go out and unload the car. And that really got interesting when my disabled sister-in-law came to live with us, because she couldn't run into the house. She looked like Pigpen when she came in. She literally have hundreds of bugs on her.
You know she's going to listen to this and give you grief. And
she knows that's true. We used to give her a bad time about it at the time.
Calling somebody Pigpen, though, right?
Well, you know what I mean, Pigpen with the dirt all around.
I'm giving you a hard time. Mosquitoes loved me. They bit me all the time in the summer, and we had not that many, but we had enough, and that has been very nice. The weather here, Dane, do you ever feel like the weather's too much the same all the time, and do you miss snow, or do you want it hotter?
I think there's a decent amount of weather variety here in Brookings.
Mm-hmm.
If I were really married to a particular weather type, I'd think more about moving, but I've been in wintry places, and I've been in deserts alike. I still like Brookings weather.
So we're talking about things that we left, like mosquitoes in Alaska, and Teresa and I won't speak for Teresa, I'll let her speak for herself. Leaving Oklahoma meant that I didn't have to endure temperatures that went down near zero a lot of times in the wintertime, and no snow or anything like that to show for it. It was just cold, that's all. A lot of times it was ice and rain. And in the summertime, temperatures during July and August would get up above 100 degrees. And I think that one of the deciding factors for me was getting out of the car one day at the Walmart. It was 117, and I got out of the car, and I was standing there in this hot parking lot, and I said, no, I don't want to do this anymore. I didn't even bother to go in. I just closed the door on the car and drove away. So there were the weather extremes. There were hazards, like tornadoes. We have tornadoes in Oklahoma, although that's a bit like trying to shoot fish in the ocean with a BB gun. Your chances of getting hit by a tornado were fairly slim. Maybe your chances of getting hit by lightning are better. But now this area has earthquakes from time to time, every 100-some-odd thousand years or whatever apart they are. But nonetheless, we're sitting potentially on a big one. That's a hazard. I'm going to disregard ocean hazards. I think anybody who lives close to the ocean is going to disregard things like sneaker waves, because if you live by the ocean, I think you kind of understand that you need to be aware of things like that.
You'd hope so.
All right, so there is the negative side of the Brookings area, the constant rain in the wintertime, the earthquake risk. I think we learned this summer that there's also the risk of fire. That conceivably, on a good Chetco day, one could fire up and come down and do major damage to the entire city. So how do these negatives weigh into this? Ray, you escape mosquitoes.
Well, not the only thing I escape. When we lived on a homestead in the house that Jean and I built ourselves. And one day when we decided we were going to homestead this land, I gave Jane a piece of paper because we were talking about the house. I said, we'll draw a house and we'll make what you want. And she was surprised she'd never drawn a house before. But anyway, we got out there and we did all, it was just a chore just getting the material to the house. And then for years, we had no electricity. We had no phone, no running water. The shopping I've already talked about. If something broke, we had to fix it ourselves. And I learned as time went on that I didn't know as much about building a house as I thought I did when I started it. Frequently, you see somebody builds a house by themselves and they move in it. Sometimes they're like, they've built a basement and then they'll work their way along. And you can actually see the progress in the construction of the house. The further along they got, the better it became. This example, in the house I'm in right now, the guy, it has tile countertops. He obviously started to learn how to do tile countertops in one of the bathrooms because it was awful. Then he went to the other bathroom, which was a little better, and then thank goodness he went to the kitchen because by then he was fairly decent, and that did not have to be replaced. But what was your question again?
you left mosquitoes.
Mosquitoes and
mosquitoes for earthquakes, or for fires.
So for years we had things like no phone and no electricity. We had electricity, but we made it ourselves with solar panels. And our communication was we had a CB. We could talk to somebody a mile or so away who did have a phone. Mm. When we finally did get a well, it cost us $20,000. The water was so incredibly full of iron, you wouldn't believe it. Kella mentioned before that I'm more blonde than she is. I was blonde from the water from that. My hair actually it turned orange. If you opened the dishwasher, was orange inside, and it looked like it was dirty, but it wasn't. It just had, everything had iron on it.
Eastern Montana's like that a lot, too. Yeah.
You think of Alaska, everything is so pristine, and if you drill a well 300 feet down, you're going to get this wonderful water. And we were actually very lucky. A lot of our friends had water that smelled like sulfur and all kinds of problems. So it's not an easy place to live, but we really enjoyed it. And then years later, we sat back and we looked at this, and we didn't save any money. And we were sitting at a restaurant, and we ran into some friends of ours who had done a similar thing about the same time. And we sat around trying to decide why we did that, and we never did figure out a reason why we did it. So maybe in our next life, we won't do that again. I don't know.
Well, you were a bit stressed when the fires came because you were in one of the evacuation zones.
Yeah. I wasn't concerned at all about that because it was 5-6 miles away from us. And in Alaska, every year we worried about fires. If it was a dry summer, they would be all around us. And we thought we left that, and hopefully we have, because
Montana was burning up they started a week after us, and they, continued on without any coverage, news coverage, just like we did. It was kind of interesting
how
we paralleled. Yeah, it was interesting with, because I'm still in touch with everyone up there, and it was amazing the parallels that happened along the way, for me.
Well, I'm going to take the fires more seriously next year, because since we live in town, I said, they won't let a whole town burn. They'll bring resources in. And so I felt pretty safe. But after what happened in Northern California, that was, sometimes they can't help it. That was suburban towns and a lot of people. And so next year, we are going to have a really good plan that we could pack the car with most of what we really want in 15 minutes, know where it is, write it out. That's my goal. I don't know how close to that goal I will get, but
Barbie dolls.
No, the Barbies can burn. Then I'll be a minimalist.
Oh, no.
The Barbies aren't coming. Your guitars can go, but can come in the car. But
what about Dan himself?
Dan's coming.
Oh,
yes.
Phew. All right.
I'll probably have to walk, but.
Oh.
I have 3 cats and a dog that are going to have to go. So.
Well, I had volunteered Ray.
And 3 frogs.
Yeah, Ray has some very special frogs. And I said, if you guys have to evacuate, the frogs can come to our house. Then I was told, well, the frogs come with live, what do they eat?
Fruit flies.
Fruit flies. So I would have to pet sit fruit flies and the frogs. And I'm like, that's okay. It sounds fun. But we didn't have to go that far.
No.
Debbie, real quickly, what kind of hazards did you leave in Montana?
Mostly for me, it was just the having to shovel so much snow around my place, the decks. I had big decks I had to keep shoveled off in the cold and the ice, and I was just over it. I'd done it all my life, and it was interesting because when I called and told my kids, I have three kids up there, that I had planned on this, and this is what I was doing when I got back. I also found out that my youngest was pregnant with her first child, so I have yet to meet my new grandson, but that will happen next month, so I'm looking forward to that.
So I think it's a wrap-up question. I would like to ask, what is it, or maybe put it this way, do you like it here? Is this home for you now? And a little bit about what you do. I mean, we've talked about what we like here, but can you sum that up into the ocean, the climate, the whatever? What's the appeal here? What do you like about it?
The ocean, the climate. I met friends. My place that I found, I feel so special here. I feel like I'm just had the most happy and content I've ever been in my life, I think. I've just found such, everything's fallen into place. You know, and it's interesting because, you know, back in the day, people would have looked at me as trailer trash the way I'm living now. You know, up there I had a 4-bedroom, 2-bath home with a big yard. And I am just ecstatic to, I don't have very far to walk to do the laundry, you know. It's just a little ways down the hall instead of down in the basement and all the, you know, just everything is just so convenient now. And I guess maybe because I'm getting older, it's just I'm looking for less to do because I like to be outside doing outside activities, and it's just easier to not have so much to do in the house. And yeah, so
I think Teresa and I, I'll speak for me, felt like this was kind of, we used to call it paradise, as we were, okay, we're going to go to paradise. And so we had expectations about what it would be. And I think at this point that Brookings has exceeded my expectations. Despite the risk of earthquakes, fires, and so on, the hazards here versus the hazards in Oklahoma or the uncomfortableness of Oklahoma. When I first thought of coming here, I thought, okay, I'm going to sit on the beach with my martini, watch the sunset, and write poetry. I have yet to do that.
Now but, you have a full-time job at the radio,
now
right?
Now I have a full-time job here, right.
This radio station is one of the things that I think is really cool about Brookings. I sometimes get in the car and I'm listening to people I know. Angela's reading a story or Brookings Cafe's on, and I know Ray and Dan. And one time we went to luncheon with several of our friends, and we were all listening to KCIW on the way, and then we were talking about what was on the radio, and that was... It's just small town charm, but not small town boring. Lots to do and interesting people. That's what I like about it. And it is still paradise. And like Dan said, it's gone beyond what we really expected in moving here. We like it even better.
Anybody else?
Very laid back. Everybody here is very friendly. We're very happy with that we were able to buy a house that was way more than we expected we'd be able to buy. It's just a perfect location that a lot of people think we're nuts for living there, but that's okay.
And you can buy a nail without having to drive 100 miles.
Very convenient, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Brookings volunteer scene is really admirable here. I'm talking about the nonprofits, the volunteer groups we've got. It's really fantastic. I also like that the political scene here, city council meetings and committees and so on, are pretty open. I feel like I can get my voice heard, and it shows up in minutes, and it's in recordings and so on. I like that. I feel like in a big city it might be a little easier to get drowned out, perhaps. But in a small town, you can have a little more sense of involvement in your mm-hmm. in your city's government.
And so you, the listener, why are you here? How did you get here? Send those cards and letters. Look us up on our website, kciw.org. You can find that by just simply typing in KCIW in your favorite search engine and then skip past the Kentucky Correctional Institution. And find us the radio station, and you can send us comments on this show plus other shows that are available on this particular station.
The opinions expressed here are those of the individual participants. Curry Coast Community Radio takes no position on issues discussed in this program.